Here's Jack Patty.
Good morning. Welcome into Friday. It's the 24th of October. We're brought to you by Landscaper's Corner at 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Landscaper's Corner has Triple Crown grass seed, the best seed for our area, available in 5, 25, and 50-pound bags. Call 225-9433. The question of the day, brought to you by United Structural Systems, a professional foundation repair and waterproofing company in business for over 20 years, ifixfoundations.com. Call 859-254-7700. Have you ever called in sick even though you were okay? Tell us at WVLKAM.com. Tune in for the results with Cruiser and Crew noon to 3. And our question yesterday, does this week's incidents in Canada make you worried about safety and security from terrorists in the United States? 61% said yes, and 39% said nope. They weren't worried anymore about it as a result of those activities in Canada. Well, this is a Forensic Friday. That means Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson is with us this morning. Good morning, Ray. Good
morning, Jack.
Domestic violence is our subject this morning because October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and you have a special guest that you brought with you this morning who has been on the show several times in the past.
Mm-hmm. Terry Farragher is a big deal in Lexington and Fayette County in the domestic violence prevention business, and we're going to talk a little bit about Domestic Violence Awareness Month and some of the issues that we want people to be aware of. But what we want to do is introduce that whole idea with a case that was prosecuted in our office.
Good. Terry, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Get up close there, if you would. Yeah, I'm glad to have you. It's not a pleasant subject, but it sure is one that we have to talk about, isn't it?
And one that has been in the news a lot
with the NFL, absolutely.
Also with us is Kathy Phillips again. Kathy is a prosecutor in our office, and one of the things she does is deal a lot with domestic violence cases, sexual assault cases. And Robin Anderson, a victim's advocate, is also with us. Welcome, girls.
Good morning.
Okay. Kathy, let's talk a little bit about this case that you brought with you today. Tell us about it.
Well, the defendant in this case, his name is Alejandro Garcia, and this case actually, unfortunately, has some similarities to the case we talked about a couple weeks ago, the David Irwin case, which was another domestic violence case, and they both involve stabbing, which is a very serious and disturbing case in and of itself. This happened back on August 11th of 2011, and it wasn't until this last summer that we finally went to trial.
Why did it take so long?
Well, there were a lot of things going on in this case. One of the big issues early on was that there is DNA, and DNA takes some time to have the testing completed.
It doesn't take 2 years.
Not 2 years, but it takes a while. And then with this particular defendant, not surprisingly, he was very difficult. He's a bad guy. And we went through several different defense attorneys. I don't think he was liking the advice he was getting attorneys.
Can we talk about that?
Sure.
Was he represented by a public defender?
Yes, he was.
Okay, so he gets a lawyer appointed to represent him.
Yes.
At no cost to him.
Of course.
Is this guy illegal?
Yes, he was. Yes.
So he gets a free lawyer, and so then what does he get to do? Pick?
I don't know that was the particular reason that it was passed around in this case. Actually, another prosecutor began with this case also, and I received the case as it was already going on, but the DNA had not been completed. But they have quite a high turnover over in the public defender's office, and so I know that it went through a few different attorneys over
there. How many attorneys are there over there? Do you have any idea?
Jeez, I don't know. It changes almost every day, it seems.
Would you have any idea, just roughly?
15, maybe?
I don't know, 15 or 20. Okay. But they also run in people from other jurisdictions, too, that we never heard of before.
They'll have conflict counsel Well, they also appoint private attorneys to cases that take on as contract attorneys. So we deal with a lot of different defense attorneys.
So if I'm arrested for something and I get and I can't afford an attorney and they appoint me one, if I don't like that attorney, I can say I don't like this attorney. Give me another free one.
Well, I don't think it's that easy, but they should. It's you know, when you change attorneys, whether it's because they leave the public defender's office or transfer someplace else, that creates another delay, you see. Mm-hmm. And delays are the best thing that ever happened to criminals.
Right.
Because if that old saying, justice delayed is justice denied. You know, people move, witnesses move, we lose contact with them over a period of time, and we work hard at trying to keep up with witnesses and so forth. And in this case, what, did it take 2 years to get to trial?
Well, this was really, really difficult. It's a very serious case. And afterwards, the victims suffered not only incredibly serious injuries physically, but emotionally also. And our victim's advocate, Robin here, was just instrumental in keeping our victims on board for this long of a time. They went through such emotional highs and lows.
I don't want to pick at the scab, but I'm going to a little bit. So if you're in this country illegally, you still have the same rights as a citizen.
The damn right, as we say. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But we can, that's another issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, in this case, the victim was the defendant's girlfriend, and they actually lived together for a few months before the domestic violence started. The police were called a few months before what happened on August 11th, and the defendant had assaulted the victim, and he
was
sentenced.
When you say assaulted, what do you mean? Beat her up?
He beat her up, yeah. Mm-hmm. He beat her up pretty good, and he went to jail, and he went to jail for 30 days on that particular offense. The victim at that time was told that there was a holder, an ICE holder, on the defendant. Because what happens is when a defendant who is illegal is incarcerated, they run a check, they find out whether or not they're here legally, and if they're not here legally, then immigration will put a holder on them.
What does that mean?
Well, what we hope it means is that after they're released from their sentence to serve for the offense in which they're incarcerated, that they'll be deported, that they'll be taken to Chicago and then go through the whole
deportation. Why do you say that's what we hope that?
Well, it doesn't always happen, as in this case.
These days, Jack, all you have to do is read the news, and it almost never happens anymore. I mean, this is where we are in that whole thing. But
I think it comes down to they can't deport everyone for everything because there are just too many.
I see.
And so in this case, she was told he would be deported. And she was told that there was a holder. Yes, yeah. She was. And so she went on her way and tried to put it out of her mind. Well, unfortunately, he was released from custody after 30 days, and she was not told he was being released. And he went right back to her home. And we hear this often in domestic violence cases, and I use quotations. He just, quote, moved right back on in. And we find that that is typical, and there's little that the victims feel that they can do about it. So he moved back in, and the violence continued. And ultimately, on August 11th of 2011, is when this horrible, horrible offense happened. On this evening, the victim had gone to bed. She'd gone to sleep. Her sister also lived in the apartment with them. The three of them were living there. The defendant, the victim, his girlfriend, and the victim's sister, who's also a victim. They were asleep, and all of a sudden, in the early morning, she woke up to a very sharp, stinging, painful sensation, and she was being stabbed. And he was just stabbing her repeatedly, over and over and over. She screamed for her sister. Her sister came running in from where she was sleeping on the couch in the family room. He started stabbing her. The victim, who's the girlfriend, eventually played, and she used the word possum. I played possum, pretended like I was dead. He chased the other sister. He started stabbing her. She did the same. He went back to the to the first victim, and the sister managed to crawl out of the apartment just with multiple very serious stab wounds and crawled out, leaving a blood trail behind her, calling for safety. Whereas the first victim was in the bedroom, she was able to get on the phone and call 911. Numerous calls were going into 911. The defendant fled. While she was on the phone with 911, he started trying to break back in. That's about the time the sirens start, and he takes off running.
All right, let's stop there. We have to take a break. We'll come back and complete the story. And if you have a question or comment, we'd like to hear it at 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590. Or email jackpatty at wvlkam.com. We'll be right back. 25 minutes after 9, News Talk 590, WVLK, Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson with us, Assistant Commonwealth's Attorney. Also with us this morning, Kathy Phillips, Robin Anderson from the Victims Advocate, and also our Director of Domestic Violence Prevention Board, Terry Farragher. Ray?
Okay, Kathy, so the last thing we heard was this character, Alejandro Garcia, stabbed his girlfriend and her sister and fled the scene when he heard the siren. So tell us what, follow that up.
Well, of course, the victims were taken straight to the hospital and just had incredibly serious injuries. While the defendant was fleeing, we basically just had a full-fledged manhunt. There were police everywhere. They were looking in creeks. They were looking in the woods.
Where did this take place, by the way, Kat?
Over Cross Keys apartments.
Okay. Yeah.
And the detective on the case, Reed Bowles, had the foresight to, while he was investigating, trying to locate the defendant and leading the search, he notified all of the hospitals to be looking, because I guess it's common that when there's a stabbing, that the stabber could receive injuries to their hands as well. And 2 days later, this guy showed up at a hospital and gave a different name and had festering wounds to his hands. And the hospitals recognized this and immediately notified the police department, and the detective responded.
Did they have a photograph of this guy? Is that what they did?
Or they eventually did, but he had just put out an alert. I'm looking for a Hispanic, you know, with the description of him, with possible wounds. And that's what happened. So he shows up at the hospital with these wounds to his hands that appeared to be festering and older, and for treatment, and gave a different name. So Detective Bowles went straight to the hospital, began interviewing him, and of course the defendant gave this crazy story and kind of made the comment, if I'm not Alejandro Garcia, therefore you can't arrest me. But he gave a different name, and of course they figured out that that's who it was, and he was arrested. The knife at the scene had blood on it, and so that was sent to the lab for DNA testing and ended up matching the DNA of the defendant. So that's how they solved the case. Our victims, meanwhile, were in the hospital for a very long time with incredibly serious injuries, and that's where our victim services came in, and Robin established a relationship with the two victims in this case and had to do an awful lot of work and an awful lot of finesse trying to keep them on board for the last few years.
Well, what are the problems you run into in trying to keep somebody that's been almost killed interested in prosecuting? Why would they decide maybe they don't want to participate?
Well, I think initially part of the problem was that one of the victims felt left down. She felt that the criminal justice system had told her that he was going to be staying in jail, and he got out and he came back to her. So she didn't have a lot of confidence in the system to begin with. We had multiple delays in this case, which was very frustrating. On one hand, they would say that they want him to go to prison forever. On the other hand, they were like, I give up, I'm done, just let him out, he can come kill me, I don't care. So it's frustrating to deal with all of those issues and the victims and trying to keep them a part of our case. And plus, you know, these two victims also had some substance abuse issues, which was something that we had to deal with as well, and keeping them involved and healthy and taken care of in this case.
I want to stop real quick and add, she said this yo-yo was in custody for 30 days. That must have come out of district court.
Yes.
And that they weren't notified about the release. If they come and work with our office, do you ever tell people how they can be made aware of somebody being released or a change in their custody status?
Yes, we always let victims know that there is the VINE system. VINE stands for Victim Information and Notification every day. It's a 1-800 number, and there is also a website in which you can register. It's 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, system in which you can register to be notified if a defendant is released from custody.
And by the way, I know people may be wondering this. The victims in this case were legal.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, we're taking a break. We'll get an update from the Information Center. We'll be right back. 253-59. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson with us in the studio this morning, along with Assistant Commonwealth Attorney Kathy Phillips, Robin Anderson from the Victims Advocate part of Commonwealth Attorney's Office, and Director of Domestic Violence Prevention Board, Terry Farragher. October is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and that's why we're talking about this subject this morning. Plus, it's been in the, as Terry, you mentioned, it's been in the news with all this crap that's been going on with the NFL. Before we go back to our case this morning, Terry, tell us about the candidates forum that's coming up next week.
Well, everyone is invited to a candidates forum to hear the views of all of the people running in contested races in Fayette County for either family court, coroner, sheriff's office, or state house of representatives. We hold this forum every time we have contested elections, and we ask the candidates questions about child abuse, domestic violence, elder maltreatment, and maltreatment of people with disabilities, and human trafficking. Really, the time to worry about who's sitting on the bench isn't when you're standing before the bench. It's when there's an election. Mm-hmm. And so we really hope folks will come out and hear the views, ideas, and even get some sense of the knowledge of these candidates on these issues. They make major decisions affecting people's lives. They set policy in our community. So we feel that it's really important that people know what they think about these issues ahead of time.
2:30 to 4 at the Library Farish Theater in the downtown library, right?
That's right. In the downtown library, 2:30 on Thursday, October 30th. And we have a great moderator by the name of Mr. Jack Patty.
What can I say?
Well, I can. Let me say something. Jack Patty's a great moderator.
He is. He's the best.
The candidates for state legislature are going to be there?
I think you should be there, Ray.
Well, I will if I can, because, you know, there's only one person that voted against the catch and release, soft on crime, hug a thug, House Bill 463 law that made it easier on criminals. And that was Stan Lee. And so if Ruth Ann Palumbo is there and Westrum is there and whomever else is there, they voted for it. And I think they need to explain why they chose criminals over victims. And so, yeah, I'll be there if I can. Is the Senate candidate going to be there?
Some of them will be there and some of them are not. We do not have any U.S. Congress candidates.
No, I'm talking about the state Senate.
We do have some candidates coming in.
Good. Well, Alice Foree Kerr also voted for this, for House Bill 463. And I think there's some questions need to be asked and answered about that.
And that certainly has to do with domestic violence or the...
Absolutely.
It has to do with... crime.
Right. It has to do with consequences for violating the law. Kathy, what happened in this case?
Well, in this particular case, the defendant was charged with two counts of assault in the first degree, each carry 10 to 20 years in prison. one question the victims had repeatedly over the years was, what happens if one of us dies because of what happened to us on August 11th of 2011? And they were still alive at the time of trial, both of them. We went to trial, kind of similar, again, to what happened a couple weeks ago in the case we discussed. We started the trial. We got through opening statements. Both victims made it through the testimony and just did a fabulous job. It was a lot of work getting them there, but they got through it and they did great. At the end of their testimony, the defendant finally kind of threw up his hands, said he wanted to talk to the judge, and went to the judge and said, I want to plead guilty. So we stopped the trial at that point. It was set for a sentencing hearing, and at the sentencing hearing, of course, we asked for the absolute maximum sentence, which was 40 years, and the judge agreed.
Who was the judge?
Judge Thomas Clark.
Right.
And sentenced this defendant to the absolute maximum the law allowed, which was 40 years. So he's now serving a 40-year prison sentence. He will serve that here in the States, and then he will be deported. Unfortunately, and very sadly, after the trial, the sister did pass away.
She, as a result of
yes.
the... Oh, really?
Yes. And it just happened like...
Now, let me ask this. Let's talk about this. Let's assume that this that she died a year or two after the incident, and it was still pending. Would we have... upped the charge to murder if you could attach her death to the as a result of the stabbing?
Well, we would have discussed that. We would have talked about that with the doctors a lot mm-hmm. to make sure that we could show that it was a direct result of his actions mm-hmm. and then that decision would be made.
Yeah, and if it was a direct result, then the we would up the charge to homicide. So
can't get a whole lot more than 40 years.
I was going to say, would the penalty been any stricter or worse?
It could have gone to life.
Yeah.
Life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and assault first is a violent crime in Kentucky.
Taking a break, 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. We're talking about domestic violence. If you have a question or comment, we'd like to hear it. Domestic Violence Awareness Month, the month of October. That's why we're talking about this subject this morning. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson with us, Assistant Commonwealth Attorney Kathy Phillips, Victims Advocate Robin Anderson, and the Director of the Domestic Violence Prevention Board, Terry Farragher. And I guess in this final segment, Ray, you want to talk to Terry about some of these right. issues.
Well, Lexington has been very good at emphasizing dealing with domestic violence. And Terry and the police department obtained a pretty substantial grant some years ago to train the police officers in dealing with domestic violence. And so tell us about some of the issues that are surrounding the whole domestic violence issues that you think our listeners need to know about.
Well, since you brought up the grant, I do want to mention and brag on the police department a little bit, because after we got that grant, we were very concerned about the police response to domestic violence back in 2005 and 2006. After we got the grant, they increased arrests by 75%.
Wow.
For domestic violence crime. They really did a lot of training and upped the ante, and nothing lets citizens know that something is illegal, we consider it a crime, then, you know, police going out and making arrests for it. So that has really made a difference in our community.
Up to that point, what they would do would be break up the fight.
And go and leave.
And then leave, and the next thing you know, they got another fight. So
they would often tell her to go down and file charges mm-hmm, at the county right. attorney's office the next day, but much better if an arrest is made at the moment. Certainly it reduces the risk for everyone involved. But Lexington's really a very committed community in terms of trying to address domestic violence. So we always have a lot of ongoing efforts to try to make sure that we have a comprehensive network of services, that there aren't big gaps that people fall through. And one of the things that we're very concerned about in our community is dating violence.
You and TK Logan, Dr. Logan, have been on the show before talking about that subject, and this legislature hadn't really done anything about that. If you're not married, you're out of luck, right?
Well, they still can bring criminal charges. So if there is an assault, I mean, it's not that nothing can be done. Certainly, we have other things in place. All of the agencies will provide services to victims, but victims of dating violence who have never lived together, do not have a child in common, are not eligible for protective orders. We may be the only state that doesn't have that protection at this point.
Really?
Yes. If not, we're one of a couple. I mean, it's just every state in the nation, pretty much, but Kentucky has recognized that we need this, and our legislature has failed to pass a bill. I believe we've had the bill before the General Assembly five times. So,
well, the House of Representatives has passed it, and it's gotten to the Senate. And one of the co-authors of House Bill 463, then Senator Tom Jensen, who has subsequently been a judge, didn't believe in it, so it never got very far in the Senate. So,
but unlike Ray, I'm not going to name names here, but it has been a problem to get it through the Senate.
That will come up in the candidates forum Thursday next week, I assume.
I think that's probably going to be one of the topics. Okay. We do not give candidates questions ahead of time, but they probably ought to know about dating violence legislation. But I also just want to mention that for particularly for young people getting in relationships, you know, when they're at the beginning of dating, it's hard to know what love looks like and feels like, and some of the very characteristics that should be red flags for that this, you know, could turn into an abusive relationship, sometimes early on feel like love to someone who is inexperienced, particularly not only young people, but you know, but I think they're particularly vulnerable, so that when someone is very passionate and possessive and attentive,
wants to know what you're doing all the
controlling,
calling day and night, want to know where you are all the time, sometimes that might feel good to someone who's you know, just entering into that world.
Mm-hmm. Somebody really cares about me,
right?
Yeah.
And man, I love all this attention.
Mm-hmm.
But then what we find out, of course, is down the road very often that becomes pathological. And all of a sudden, over time, the person feels trapped and isolated and out of control, unable to do what they want to do anymore or see their friends. So it's, you know, the warning signs a lot of times aren't recognized.
Terry, thank you very much. Thank all you guys for being with us this morning. We are unfortunately out of time. Stand by. We have an update for